Well, happy Thursday. Hope the week has been wonderful for you and that the weekend upcoming is going to be nice as well, and particularly since that weekend is going to include an observance that we call Father's Day, and that's what we're going to be talking about here on Perspectives this morning. And before we get underway, a reminder, you are always more than welcome to become a part of the festivities via phone and email. 414-1234 is the number to call locally. It's 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Perspectives@WFSU.org is the email. And if you want to tweet us, that's at WFSU Perspective. Oh, Father's Day. That is an observance that it really brings a lot of warmth to my heart, because I remember my dad with great fondness. And maybe you remember your dad, too. And if you'd like to share some father stories with us, whether they are poignant or happy, we'd love to hear from you in the course of the next hour, because we'll be talking about dads and their impact on society and their families and all of us. And if you are a father, we can talk a little bit about that, too. We have an expert on dads with us today, Jack Levine, who's founder of Four Generations Institute, which is a kind of a communications, public policy, and all-around advocacy kind of situation, Jack. And how'd you get that thing started?
Well, you know, we all evolve, and my career in Florida was primarily focused on children's causes for 25 years. And then I started hearing voices from the back seat, including my old dad's voice. And that voice was communicating some new messages to me. Children are important. I haven't abandoned my children's advocacy, but we're multi-generations in our family and in our community. And in fact, we're not just three generations. When you and I grew up, it was parents, children, and grandparents. And now we have children, parents, grandparents, and super elders. And the demography leads me to want to address the family issues more spectrally and more comprehensively through Four Generations Institute. So it's an initiative. I carry the message wherever I go and try to get people to conjoin the generations whenever possible.
You've got a number of things that are actually coming up here, and let's mention them here at the start of the program, and we'll do it halfway through and then towards the end as well, that are going on that are relative to dads and families and all of that. And one of them is taking place this evening on the 22nd floor of the Capitol. From 5:30 till 7:30, that's the Florida Heart Gallery reception. And what's the deal on that?
Well, Heart Gallery is an innovative photography methodology for showing a beautiful studio and on-site portraits of young Floridians from childhood all the way through teen years who are eligible, legally eligible for adoption. And Heart Gallery actually got formed in New Mexico by asking professional photographers, studio photographers, to depict the young people in a setting that they're comfortable with their hobbies, their locales. So it's not just a kind of a blank background shot. And these are actually beautifully composed portraits. And through the community-based care network, which are our foster care and adoption agencies around Florida, we have now more than a dozen heart galleries at the community level, and this is the best of the best. So these are 40-plus portraits that have been taken of Florida children who are in stages of adoption. Some still need homes. Some are still doing the paperwork for the finalization. So I'm excited. The governor's office of child protection and adoption, Zach Gibson, who has been on air with you, is very involved in this exhibit. And I previewed it earlier in the week, and it is really breathtaking in terms of the personality, and the faces are persuasive. So it's going to be a great event, and folks can still come out and have a couple appetizers and some light beverages and hear about the importance of Heart Gallery.
And the air conditioner works on the 22nd floor of the Capitol. You can count on that if you've had a kind of sweaty day and you need to cool down and chill out. That's a great place to do it. Coming up on Saturday then, Jack, from 9 until 11 in the morning, it's the Prayer Breakfast and Adoption Advocacy event that is going on. And that's for the entire region, not just Leon County, right?
Yes, that's a five-county region. And just a quick departure, Tom. last night's horrific event at the AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, I think deserves not so much a moment of silence, but a reflection on how vulnerable we all are. That's a historic African-American church. Dr. King spoke there. And to imagine somebody, they say the perpetrator is a young man, to take those lives and extinguish them, I think we all have to give pause. I mention that because our event Saturday, our celebration of families, is at the Bethel African American Church, Episcopal Church, out on Orange Avenue. And this is a multi-agency effort, Department of Children and Families, the local Big Bend community-based care, One Church, One Child. And the message really is unification through adoption. And we're very, very pleased with how the community has embraced the needs of these children who really need a warm heart and an open door and a forever home, a forever family. So it's going to be a celebration. We're serving breakfast. Come on out at 9 o'clock. I'll have a chance to deliver a message, as will many others. We're going to kind of have a lineup of communicators. So please, I know your listeners are very community active, and that's a nice morning to do on Saturday.
A beautiful church, too. And in case you've never been there, it's something you should check out. That's another architectural gem that we have in this community. Jack, as far as dads are concerned, I was thinking about this the other night in anticipation of our chat today, that we used to sort of have a more cohesive, I guess, or unified perception of fatherhood. It was a little bit more, I guess, standardized in our society back in maybe the 50s and the 60s. And today it runs the gamut from the father-centric kind of family, and the forlorn Duggar clan comes to mind right there, where the dad is in charge of everything and everyone must kind of bow down to his dominance as the head of the family, all the way to the concept of the disposable father, the sperm donors, as you know, sometimes referred to, who is, you know, he breezes in, breezes back out, and you never see the guy again. And somewhere between those two extremes, that seems to be where most of our fathers are right now. Is there any wonder that we're kind of confused?
Well, Tom, you know, your perceptions are reality. Fatherhood is a biological reality. We know how this happens in terms of impregnation and giving birth. Dadhood is a different concept. Dadhood, in my mind, is about responsibility, about being present and being active in the nurturance of the child. And that does not have to be a biological connection. And that's what's magic about the adoption conversation and about the mentoring conversation. Where I think we are is so many children, as many as 40%, 43% of our children are not living with a adult male in their household. And what we really need to recognize is that is an opportunity for the community to step in and say in a positive way, what are the values, both for little boys and little girls, or teenage boys and teenage girls, to have positive males in their lives. Now, we can, you know, we can judge irresponsibility, we can, say what's wrong with men, but I've got a study right here in my hand that I'd be glad to send to any of your listeners as an attachment that says we have more father involvement than we previously believed. As many as 90% of biological fathers are, to one degree or another, anywhere from a measure of moderate to medium to even very involved in the lives of their children. And what's interesting to me is we always kind of think of the negative, but I have a study here that is authoritative, full documentation, 22 pages, that says our assumptions may be a little bit off in terms of father involvement. Now, that's not to say that we live in a perfect world. And what I would imagine, and Tom, you touched on it, is in some cases we have a distancing. It's emotional. It's economic. We have a lot of fathers who do not have the earning capacity that is needed to be responsible economically, although we do have a system to try to enforce that when there is an order. We also need to recognize, and I think this is true, that there are fathers who have problems. We have veteran fathers, not all of whom, but have come home from wars, wounded emotionally or physically. Some of us have lived with fathers like my own who had a disability. My father was a blind man. And I think there are lessons about fathering and being a dad that traverse that spectrum as well. So I think, yes, it's a Rubik's Cube. We've got to make the matches. And yet when we think about the opportunities, they are bountiful.
Because there are so many aspects to being a father that, and the daunting challenge that you just talked about, Jack, I think scares some guys away, that I could never be the man my father was, or I can't live up to this ideal that I have in the back of my head of what a real, effective, and loving, and caring father is. I can't meet that criteria. I'm out of here.
Well, I hate to admit, but that may be the case, living up to what we idealize as the responsible dad. But the opposite could be true too, Tom, which is maybe my dad was not a good caregiver, was not nurturing. Maybe he had his own emotional problems, and I'm not going to follow that path. I'll go in the direction of being responsible and being present. And, you know, I give the example of, you know, sports fandom. You know, lots of guys, including me, are big sports fans. But spectatorism is one thing, and involvement is another. So, you know, instead of watching that fifth game on the weekend, how about throwing a ball to your own child or the neighbor's children appropriately? And I give that as an example only because I think involvement, based upon our interests and our passions and our hobbies, is all kids really need to connect. They don't. It's not complicated. It's about relationship building and about being there when the child needs us most. And of course, that's true of moms. And I'm not excluding moms from this conversation. But on the eve of Father's Day, I think we need to make a pledge to be a more active dad, and that's across the generations. It involves not only young dads, but older dads and grandfathers, etc.
Do you have a father's story in anticipation of the upcoming Father's Day observance? Give us a call, 414-1234 on Perspectives, 800-926-8809, long distance, and Perspectives at WFSU.org. Jack Levine is here with us for the full hour, and we hope to hear from you, too. Back on Perspectives, Jack Levine here with us as we talk about fathers and their contribution to not only their families, but their communities and the world at large. I wanted to read something here that you wrote, Jack. This was your Dad's Day message. Just an excerpt from it here. Father's Day, you said, might be misnamed. I vote for Dad's Day. I believe there's a big difference between being a father and being a dad. The former is biological, the latter emotional. Fathering is an act of nature. Being a dad is all nurture. It's certainly much easier to become a father than to commit to becoming a dad. Every child needs a dad who may or may not be his or her biological father. A dad is someone who's there when the child needs him most, in good times and bad, when guidance and the gifts of an open ear and caring heart are most important. You said that going into the break of trying to forge a connection with the child, whether, again, your bio kid or someone that you're mentoring or whatever. And that has got to be the biggest challenge, I think, for most men. We forget what it's like to be a kid sometimes. We're off into this big grown-up world, and we've kind of left behind childish things, to go biblical on us here. And what's it like now to become a kid and to connect with that kid in a way that's beneficial for them and us too?
Well, you know, Tom, our kids, by some of our definitions and observations, are growing up too fast. A lot of our young people are being exposed to cultural, sexual, negative, and in many cases violent stereotype of what it means to be an adult. And I can be very critical of that saturation. You know, we've got video games that we sell. It says 17 and over on the box as if that excuses it. But what's to stop that 17-year-old from sitting there with their 2-year-old cousin watching this murderous, mayhem, sexist, violent outburst? Now, I'm never the guy who says, let's go back to the old days, but I really do believe in balance. And what I believe about balance is, what about nature? You know, our kids used to play outside, and now there's this fear of the outside. What if they catch a germ? What if they touch something that, you know, that can hurt them? Well, yeah, there are some dangers out there, but, you know, there's some scientific research now, pediatric research, that our kids are more susceptible to diseases because they're not getting immunized by nature. I've got a very good friend who's a writer, Richard Louv, L-O-U-V, he can be looked up on Google, who writes specifically about this, about we have denaturalized children. And I don't want to wax too philosophical about this, but that is also about involvement. You know, we have sequestered children into technology, and that's not necessarily a good thing if they're not communicating. And if they're only receiving messages but not having the opportunity to articulate a clear thought, make eye contact, you know, we're into some behaviors that have to be really examined. And one of them mentioned before is the whole spectatorism, you know, watching somebody else do something. Movies, sports, instead of doing it ourselves and building the blocks of both failure and success. And sometimes it's the male in the community who has to give that example. Not everything can be perfect, but we can make our way towards a higher level of competency. And it's my passion to think of new ways to engage, whether it be the media or political people or families. And I think we're up for a new engagement of intergenerational male communication with children.
One of my favorite recollections of my own dad, when you're talking about that sort of connection, was when he'd come home from work and we'd have dinner. And then, since we were kind of in a cool part of the country, at least for most months out of the year, we'd go and get his jacket. And I knew that meant one thing. He'd just say, let's go. We would go for a walk in the woods. Mm. We had two different woods, one to the south of the town, one to the north. And we spent, I can't tell you how many hours just out traipsing these godforsaken paths up through the mountains and through the streams and everything else. And very often hours would go by and very few words were spoken. But that recollection still just sticks with me as real as if it had happened yesterday. And I learned more from my dad just in those quiet walks through the woods probably than any of the preaching or the conscious teaching that he ever did when he sit down and say, here's the way it's got to be, son.
Well, Tom, I love that. In my case, because I had a blind father and he was 60 when I was born, so I had the oldest dad on the block by far and one of the more disabled ones, that gave me an obligation to read for him. I profess to be a good reader and a good writer. I don't mean to be immodest, but because I learned that at my father's knee. And when I would lead him, he had a white cane and I had a strong right arm. And that guidance has been a pattern. I love advocacy because in a way it's a rekindling of that conversation that I had with my dad of showing him the way.
One of our buddies back in the newsroom, a lovely young lady by the name of Talia, who's working with us here during the summer, brought up a story of her dad from just this past weekend, because she was all aglow. And I said, gee, what was your weekend like? She says, I went to my dad's wedding. And the new wife and new members of the family and all of this is something that maybe was not so common back when you and I were growing up, Jack, where you now have blended families and new step kids and all that kind of thing. That's an additional challenge now, too. And as the original dad, do I sink into the background? Do I stay involved? What are those challenges like?
Well, the demography is amazingly different. Back before 1970, only 15% of marriages ended in divorce. And now it's almost 50%. Now, there are reasons for divorce, and I'm not criticizing on a family-by-family basis, but that is a tripling, do the math. And therefore, there are opportunities that are going unmet when it comes to, you know, wage earning and the basic economics of families when families are split. And then, of course, there's reconstituted families. So all of a sudden, you know, two children from the mom and two children from the dad become brothers and sisters under the same household, but they don't really know each other. And that kind of new family structure really needs to be thought through and negotiated in some ways, because it's not the child's choice. And therefore, we have to, you know, look through an examination. Now, you know, I'm an advocate, and advocates try to get policies right and try to get programs right. And we've got some wonderful programs in Florida that open the door. We've got a primary prevention program called Healthy Families Florida, now at a 98% success rate of keeping kids out of the protection system. A lot of the families are female-headed, but one of the initiatives is to bring the dads, whether they be the father or the dad, into the lives of these families, to teach positive discipline, to access services which are not only available but also accessible. Then there's guardian ad litem. I was at the table in 1979 in Jacksonville, where we had our pilot circuit, hoping for 100 adult volunteers to represent children in the abuse neglect system. And now we're at 10,000. And that's not just a math story. That's a story of amazing need, but also amazing accomplishment. And we need more male guardians ad litem, but we have a lot of male guardians ad litem who have stepped forward and says, I can do this too. So, you know, guardianadlitem.org, healthyfamilies.org. I mean, we are looking at amazing examples, big brothers, big sisters. We have a plethora of individuals who say, I can do that. I mean, I can do an hour or two a week. I can step forward and help with the relationship building. And it's a commitment, but the rewards are so much more bountiful than the investment.
You've also got an emphasis now, and it's not racial. It's a cultural thing, because there are many cultures in which the roles of fathers are, for whatever reason, somewhat marginalized. But in the African American community now, you have programs like the one that helped us to receive yet another All America City Award, distinguished young gentleman Ramon Alexander and his folks, and there's several others that are around right now to try to bring more men into the lives of particularly young guys who need that kind of example and something to base their lives on.
Well, you know, our mayor, Andrew Gillum, I mean, you know, he's half my age, so I'm allowed to speak about him as a young up-and-comer. Your father of twins, he and RJ have, in a way, personified, they are Tallahassee's first family. And his involvement, his interest in children, there have been an impressive cascade of ideas that are flowing within our own, you know, metro Tallahassee and in the outlying areas as well, about new ways of engagement and new ways of exciting community around families. And it really makes an advocate's heart beat when it comes to that kind of progress.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor and the city's first lady were out at Rudiger Elementary School doing some reading to kids under the United Ways program, that literacy outreach there a number of months ago. And it was fascinating to see the reaction of the kids. This is like a first grade classroom. And some of them, they loved the story, but I'm watching the faces and the body language.
Yes.
And it's like they hadn't seen this before.
Yes.
For a couple of the kids. And I thought, my God, this is almost like an alien life form that they're witnessing here. And mom and dad, you know, sitting there reading to the kids.
And you know, dads are doing more. They're doing the shopping and the cooking. They're doing the cleaning. These are not unmasculine activities. It shows that more and more families are in partnership. I also think that there's a positive message when we realize that how we eat and what we eat is improving. We talked moments ago off the air about community gardens and the bountiful positive outcomes when you can see your vegetables grow and pull them into the house and eat them fresh. You know, too many of our kids are eating out of bags and boxes. They're really not exposed to that positive nutritional and, by the way, more delicious alternative. So, you know, here again, I think as we balance our time and figure out how we want to invest our days, our hours, our minutes, I think involving kids is the way to go.
Come on, son. Time to go out and dig in the dirt. Come on. Let's go to the phones at 414-1234, our local number, by the way. George rejoins us. Hey, George, how's it going? Uh-oh, I hear a sprightly tune. That's our on-hold music I think we got. You there, George? Okay. We'll try to catch up with you in just a little bit. We do have a new phone system that we recently installed. It doesn't make a whole bunch of difference for perspectives, but we have gone into the 21st, perhaps 22nd century by having voice over internet phone system throughout the rest of the station. Sometimes we have a little communication problem there. If you're just joining us, by the way, Jack Levine with Four Generations Institute is our guest here on Perspectives. And we'll mention, if you have just joined us again, the fact there are a couple up and coming events, the more recent of the two being tonight from 5:30 until 7:30 up at the Capitol there, Jack.
Yes, that's the Hart Gallery grand opening of these beautifully composed photographs of our children who are available for adoption. It's a free reception. The community is welcome at 5:30 to 7:30. There'll be some state leaders there. There'll be some community-based advocates and some foster and adoptive families will be with us. So it'll be a kind of a celebration of not only coming Father's Day, but the opportunity to recognize that some children do need a forever family.
And amongst all of the negativity that sometimes gets thrown around to different state government agencies for whatever reason, the Department of Children and Families has been singularly successful through its adoption program and bringing in community partners to really bring those numbers down. I'm amazed at how fewer children we have now available for adoption in Florida than we did 5 years ago.
Yes, it's a real story of conjoined effort and progress. Our community-based care system is proving to be very, very effective, working with private agencies to make the case for a better efficiency in foster care and therefore a better efficiency in adoptability. I mean, locally we have Boys Town, we have Children's Home Society, and of course we have community-based care of the Big Bend, which covers multiple counties. Their leadership is outstanding in getting the word out at the community level, and they are creative. I mean, it's not just an occasional email. It's visitation. It's community events like the one we're having on Saturday. And what we're creating is a conversation around what's best for kids. And the more people who are engaged in that conversation, the more action is taken.
And that Saturday event you were talking about, Saturday morning here, Jack, the Prayer Breakfast and Adoption Advocacy event, talk about that.
Yes, that's at the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church on Orange Avenue. There'll be a series of speakers. I'm honored to be one of them. And we're bringing together a wide spectrum of folks who are both in state service, Department of Children and Families, guardian ad litem, as well as community-based care, and One Church, One Child, which is a creation of a brilliant gentleman who I have met, Father Clemens in Chicago, who transplanted that model down to Florida with great success. And that really is, as it says, asking each church to be involved in the mechanism of adoption so that the families can grow.
We are back on the phones. I think we're up and functional. Let's go to line one here, if we could here. Paul wants to comment here on Perspectives. Hi, Paul.
Howdy, folks. How y'all doing today?
Hey, real good. Thanks.
Good. Yeah, I got lots of brothers and sisters. My mom raised me as a single mom, and I feel like that role is irreplaceable for the child. And a lot of times the mothers are always sticking through, doing everything they can, sacrificing everything. But I did have great male role models coming in and tutoring me and playing ball with me and things like that. And that would later on develop into, you know, seeking out their advice and getting help through those rough teenage years. I just want to encourage a lot of people who have that instinct inside of them. A lot of the guys out there, they feel like they're great with kids and they don't have any. Then your you're chosen for this work. It's a real good deal.
Well, that's great. Are you a dad, by the way, Paul?
Actually, no. I actually was the oldest one that grew up here, and so I had to play that role after my parents divorced from about 8 years old on. And I just feel blessed to support single moms, use my own money to get groceries, to do things for people who, in other ways, you know, that's another type of help that I can give.
Well, Paul, this is Jack Levine. It's the sound of your voice is music to my ears because I've got a nephew, Paul, who grew up with some challenges and now is in his mid-years is getting a psychology degree, and he wants to work with young people as kind of a more mid-aged enterprise. But what I'm hearing in your voice, Paul, is a deep concern and commitment. So find the path that you can follow so that you can help other kids as you've been helped, and that would be very rewarding.
That is great, Paul. We really appreciate the input on that. You don't have to be a bio father to be a dad, just like you said in your message there, Jack.
Thank you.
Let's see if George is hanging in online. Okay. Yeah, let's go to break, and then we'll be back. And, George, you hang on the line. You are a model of patience, sir, and we sure appreciate it. 414-1234 is the local number here for Perspectives, 800-926-8809, and Perspectives at WFSU.org. By the way, if you want to catch up on the program after it leaves the air, go to WFSU.org and pull down Program, click Perspectives. You are there. We'll be right back. Pre-Father's Day edition of Perspectives here on WFSU-FM with Four Generations Institute founder Jack Levine, and we are joined by George. Thank you for your patience and persistence, George. Good to hear from you again.
Good morning, Tom. Sorry about the first phone call. I had a scholarship donor that I had to ask to call back because we had a fire drill, so I had to give him the information. That's why you got the old music. But anyway, you know, the one thing I'll always remember about my dad, and unfortunately I lost him about 3 months after my 11th birthday, was that he owned a restaurant, served everything from breakfast to dinner, including a $1.49 steak dinner in 1960 because of a printer's mistake on the menu. But I remember taking trips with him to a Greyhound bus station, a lunch counter that he ran, and two concession stands at one of the state parks in northeastern Pennsylvania. And we load up the car, and he'd come over and say, George, you want to go to the mountain with me? Yeah, let's go. So we'd get in the car with the things that he had to take to the various places, and we'd run them up there, drop them off, stay for a while, and head back.
Isn't that amazing how that sticks with you, George?
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah. God, what a sweet story. And what did you learn from those trips? What was the thing that you carried forward even to today beyond the happy memory of that?
Well, you know, the one thing is, you know, he used to get, it was not uncommon for him to go to a company called Swift and Company and buy like several hundred dollars worth of ground beef and steaks and what have you every week. You know, so I, you know, and I always used to enjoy him getting all the souvenirs that he used to sell and watching him unpack them and the candy and such that he used to sell, and we used to take up there, you know, all of that stuff.
And Georgia.
You know, he never stopped.
And, George, this is Jack Levine. Thanks for that memory. These days we go out to the farmer's market and bring home some veggies.
Yeah. Well, you know, this Jack was, you know, candy, hot
sure.
dogs, hamburger meat,
no.
Souvenirs, you know, candy, cigarettes, you know,
we
all
gotcha.
The stuff that he sold. And we used to, it used to come to the central, I remember we had a soda fountain in our restaurant and a roadside stand, and everything would be dropped off in the soda fountain. And I'd basically have to help him load it up and take it up there and drop it off and come back.
Boy, sounds like some great life lessons there, George. Thanks for sharing those this morning.
You're
on
welcome.
Perspectives.
So, Tom, we were chatting about preserving our heritage. And what I'd like to offer is an idea that we are now doing in our own family. You know, everybody's got pictures sitting around on the in drawers and albums, maybe up on the wall.
On the hard drive.
On the hard drive. And unfortunately, sometimes they're one of a kind, which makes it dangerous if there's a storm or some other event. But it's a missed opportunity. And what I'm advocating is for folks to collect their best 15, 20, 25 and caption them. Who's in that picture? Where was that grandfather when that picture was taken? Where was that wedding day? Caption them, scan them, make a family album, a virtual, basically a scannable family album, and then push the button. And that's the family gift for anniversaries, holidays, celebrations, when somebody turns 50, when somebody has their 50th wedding anniversary. And it's amazingly economical. Once you set it up, for $5-7 each, you can have the gift of family heritage. As a matter of fact, I'll offer your listeners, I've got a document of the 100 questions you should be able to answer about your family. I'll send it to anybody free of charge. I just need an email, Jack, J-A-C-K, at 4, that's number 4, Jen, G-E-N.org, Jack at 4gen.org. Just say family history, and I'll put that right as an attachment. It's a friend composed it about 20 years ago and now has laid it out with some beautiful photographs and as an example of that which other families can do. So we're doing that in our own family, and I very much encourage it, maybe in celebration of Father's Day, maybe in celebration of a birthday, but let's do it.
And if I may make a suggestion, too, along that same line, Jack, and that was done with my dad. My younger brother set this up probably about 2 years before Dad's passing, was to just get him in his favorite chair, sit up, in this case it was a digital recorder, and just said, Dad, tell me about what you did in World War II, or tell me how you met Mom, or tell whatever, and just let him ruminate for hours. That has become one of the most precious things I can think of. I can go back and listen to Dad and still glean some wisdom from the way that he would couch a story and bring in all of these multitudinous details in a way that was just incomparable. Nobody could tell a story like my dad.
And, you know, it reminds me, Tom, that's beautiful testimony. Regret is preventable. When we lose somebody, sometimes we sit and go, oh, I can't believe I didn't get the story of the early days. I can't believe I never heard the stories. Well, let's get on it. Let's prevent the regret and move forward. And we have this technology now, both audio and video, that we can do that, and the value of that accrues over the generations.
And again, what a great present for someone else in the family here to give them some insights into their own history and backstory. Mike joins us on Perspectives on Line 1. Hello, Mike. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. First of all, I want to say what great contributions Jack Lee makes to this community and state and nation with his 4Gen Institute. I'm familiar with his work, so I really appreciate that. And I wanted to take us maybe away from Memory Road just a bit and talk about the present and the future. And that is basically the status quo in today's elementary schools in America. And I really feel that we have a lack of male role models in the elementary school. If you look at the demography of it, we have mainly female teachers. We have for the last 100 years or more. And what is going to change with gender roles until we start getting more males and for that matter, more ethnic diversity in the teacher workforce, especially at the elementary level? And I appreciate, again, your time today with fatherhood, but I wanted to bring it into the present and future discussion.
Mike, you are so on target. As a matter of fact, I'll go even earlier. Where are our men in preschool teaching? Now, I say this with pride and joy. I'm a child development major, and our older son, Aaron, is now in his sixth year as a preschool teacher. Three in Tallahassee. Now he lives in Portland, Oregon. He is a great guy and a great teacher. So I am working right now, Mike, and again, jack@4gen.org is the way to get to me, on a campaign to both ask the system, why aren't there more males? And if the pushback is we don't trust men, well, that's called discrimination. And like all discrimination, we need to put it in the sunshine, get it out there, and disinfect it. Because to basically assume that half the population is not safe with children, that is an arch offense not only to my son and me, but it's an arch offense to our future. So we're working on this. We have some ideas, and stay tuned for that one. So I would say from really birth on, we need to get more males involved in the lives of their children, not only in homes, but in preschools and in elementary schools and in our community. And that would be a great, great model for our future.
Jack, even though you, the editorial you here, may have had the greatest dad in the world and learned all these phenomenal life lessons and modeled what being a good father should be, this is one of the toughest jobs on the planet, and not everything is intuitive, and not everything is subject to the way Dad did it. So what community resources are available? You talked about some of them earlier. To help dads that, oh, my Lord, I have no idea how to deal with this problem, or some of the other helpful hints that I need to be effective in this role.
Well, if anyone Googles fathering, you will find a wide spectrum of resources, both printed as well as video, on the role of positive males in the lives of their families. I hate to put people off to the web, but in reality, we need to knock on some doors as well. I think there are some religious institutions, some faith communities that are looking at fathering classes, fathering education. Again, I mentioned Healthy Families. That is available to some families in our communities. I also think that we have PTA. When we think about it, some people assume PTA, parent-teacher or PTO, some people call it because it's not affiliated with national PTA, parent-teacher organizations, are women's organizations. Well, that's not true. So in terms of fostering, adopting, PTA, there are opportunities for males to get involved. I would also say that as we look at the child development curriculum, we need to understand more that our children should not be observers of video. They need to be engaged, reading, singing, talking, walking, all of these basics of child development. Dads can be much more engaged in that. It doesn't take a degree in child development to be a good, active, engaged dad.
And how to maybe by taking a time management course, and I hate to throw that back on the internet or some kind of formal training too, but how to apportion your life so that your children, and in increasing numbers of instances, the grandkids, have your time and have your dedication and all. And it's not all about work and letting mom do the heavy lifting all the time.
Well, 20 minutes is basically 2% of our wakeful hours, of our wakeful day. 20 minutes is 2%. You can get so much positive outcome in 20 minutes. That's a reading through of a story or two, and our children like it to be repeated. being out in nature and observing, naming the birds, creating a conversation where things are naturally flowing in terms of being out for an outing. These are not heavy duty time commitments, but the value is tremendous.
And it sometimes can lead to one of the greatest gratifications in the life of any father, where you get that, hopefully a phone call rather than an email, because still that's kind of impersonal. And let's just hope it's not a text, okay, where you have the child who calls up and says, Dad, can I talk to you? I need your help. And on one hand, you think, oh, God, now what? But on the other hand, it's, you're asking me? What an honor.
Yeah. Our youngest son is now married. Josh grew up in Tallahassee. Both our boys grew up in Tallahassee. And at his wedding, he married a girl from Northern California. She's delightful, Natalie. And guess who was the crier? There it was in a redwood grove in Marin County, a beautiful August day 2 years ago. And the grandma was fine, the moms were fine, and I was the crier. And I'll tell you why. We almost lost that boy. In his first day, he was a risk baby. He was full term, but he was the fattest little thing in intensive care. And the ceremony was conducted by our sister-in-law, great attorney here in town, Victoria Hewler. And she reminded me and everyone else that the first time she saw him was in intensive care in my arms. And that just broke the dam, and I had to cry. Now, just imagine the emotions that every family feels about maybe almost losing a child, and the miracle of medical science kept him alive and well, and now he's doing great. And those are the memories that last a lifetime, literally. And every time that we think that we're challenged, we have an opportunity to do better.
Yeah, that is one now for the picture book, too, I think, huh?
Yeah. Oh, we've got pictures.
Oh, just a few minutes we have remaining in our pre-Father's Day perspectives here on WFSU-FM. Again, reminding, if you've just joined us here, a couple of upcoming events that are going on. One is happening this evening, just in case you got an hour or so to see some absolutely fabulous photographs. They're up in a great gallery, which is on the 22nd, the top floor of the Florida Capitol. And in between the pictures, you can look out at the glorious landscape that is Florida's capital city. The Florida Heart Gallery reception tonight, Jack.
Yes, 5:30 to 7:30. And while the launch is tonight and tonight's the celebration, that gallery will be up for 2 months. So anytime this summer, as a respite from the street heat, you can come up to the 22nd floor and view those beautiful pictures. And also, I'd love to get a note from any of your listeners at jack@4gen.org so I can follow up with these resources. This is a great station. This is a great program, and I'm a big fan.
Well, we're a big fan of you too, Jack, obviously. Prayer Breakfast and Adoption Advocacy Event, that takes place this Saturday morning from 9 until 11, right down the road from us here on Orange Avenue at Bethel AME. And that will be, In Praise of Dads, I think, is going to be your talk.
So absolutely.
That's worth the cost of admission, too, which is free, of course.
Way more than the cost.
Well, I think just in the few moments we have remaining here, Jack, just a few ruminations. You talked about reading to your dad. That was one. What other fond memories do you carry here into the these years?
You know, my father, so when I'm 10, he's 70. And he would talk to his friends on the phone, and I don't think he got the whole mechanics right, so he thought he had to talk a little louder. And it's easy to eavesdrop on a blind man, by the way. So I used to sit outside of his door. I was fascinated by – I only heard one part of the conversation, but the kinds of things that he would talk to his buddies about. And they were not chit-chat. These were movement conversations. These were conversations about the issues of the day, especially civil rights. He was extremely interested in civil rights reform. And, of course, he wasn't watching the videos on TV. He was listening to the radio and learning more about these terrible, terrible exclusionary practices. So I think I got some of my justice senses from listening to him. And the other thing he would say is, that Jack, I am raising him to be a teacher. And, you know, my father was very influential. When he wanted your opinion, he gave it to you. So I think that was inculcated in me really from early years that teaching is important. I became a teacher at his insistence for a few years and then taught delinquent kids. And now I've been advocating for 38 years in Florida on family policy. But I think it's rooted in my needing to be helpful to him in those early years and reading for him and listening to him. The history of the 20th century came through his recollections, you know, born in 1891. So he's with me today.
What a fabulous dad. And you are definitely your father's son. Jack Levine for 4 Generations Institute. It has been a real pleasure and an honor to have you on the program today, Jack.
Thank you, Tom. And thanks to everyone who listens.
And thanks to all the fathers who were listening today. And we love you, Dad. Phone calls and our online connections being handled today by Sawyer, and we got Taylor pushing the buttons and making it sound great. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us today. Next week, the infamous Village Square God Squad. Be forewarned, and we'll catch you then.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.